Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hunt Lift Deep podcast, brought to you by Hunt Lift Deep Official. We're here at the homestead in real life with real people. Yeah, in Georgia. With two of my favorite people. What's going on, guys?
Not much. Had a good weekend down here. Garrett's on the East Coast for the men's and women's rendezvous. We did women's last weekend. Men's is this coming weekend. And he had some time, so he's been vagabonding around doing some electrical jobs for the boys. And then I flew back out from Louisiana, and the three of us and Colt Hours went out to check out the shotgun venue for our shotgun shoot, our first ever forward-facing Hunt Lift Eat event, which is going to be really cool. If you guys are going to be around the North Georgia area March 23rd, definitely come check it out. Shoot some clays and eat some food and hang out with some cool people.
Skeet 'em and eat 'em.
Rack 'em and schwack 'em.
Yeah, skeeting and eating was my initial plan, but Carter vetoed that one, so it's Rack 'em and Schwack 'em is the name of the event now, which is also pretty good. It's no skeeting and eating.
I'm not pitching that to sponsors.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in coming on as a sponsor, we've got some sponsorship packages, so just hit us up, slide into Carter's DMs, or hit him up at carter@huntlifteat.com.
I won't read your email. Just kidding, I'll read it.
He probably won't. It'll take him 2 weeks.
Actually, I feel like Robin would probably read your email before you would.
That's true. Yeah, would love to people come check it out. It's on the. You can sign up on the website, huntlifteat.com.
Yeah. March 23rd.
March 23rd.
Cool. Well, we're here to recap part three of our
final part
epic saga of Colorado fourth rifle, elk, and mule deer.
I hate elk hunting.
Yeah, I don't think they exist. I think we saw them, but fake. I think they're all fucking government-planted
like
robots.
Unicorns.
It's like those DNR ticks. Plants that they get to get poachers and shoot in the field.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. Like, but I bet these guys are dumb enough to shoot some cows. Yeah, so, but yeah, so kind of catch us back up. Well, we got through day three on the last one. So the next morning, John and Garrett, Their game plan is they're going to wake up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. They're going to go head back up the mountain where we had been the day prior and try to get on those bulls that they spotted. And then my plan was I was going to hunt a different piece. So the first day that Carter and I and Cole went up and we were glassing into that basin, I glassed the backside of that ridge line and saw there's a bunch of BLM ground down there. And I was like, that looks really deery. And then Tim, the owner of the outfit, was like, oh, yeah, you got to go down there and just walk these, you know, two-track BLM roads that go straight up the mountain. But I was like, yeah, that sounds like a plan.
So I thought it looked steep at first.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Deary was a second
describing
word.
Yeah, it was definitely, there's some steep parts. But so our plan was to go walk that until about noon, and then we were going to come back down. You were going to leave, and then I was going to road hunt with Tim as, like, the last-ditch effort because Tim just has the ability to see these things. And so we're going to drive the two tracks on the private and then try to see if we could find a buck.
And a couple big old bucks have been spotted already by other guys in camp who didn't have deer tags. So we knew there was a potential 160 running around that had been sighted three times.
Yep.
You were the only one in camp with a buck tag, right?
Yep. And so, why don't you pick us up where
your baton death march.
That was an interesting day for sure. John and I, kind of like you said, we planned to get up at 3:30. We got in the truck, drove up there, got to our parking spot. But
when John's alarm went off, I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it was rough.
I was his alarm. I woke up early, and I woke him up 7 minutes before his alarm, and he was pissed.
Yeah, that storm came in pretty bad that night. When we drove up there, it was just pounding snow on us still. So we parked the truck, and then we said, we're going to take an hour and a half nap here because this is miserable.
Did you guys drive to where the tent was?
Yeah, we went back to that spot. got ready to hike in, and we thought it was only about a mile, mile and a half to where we wanted to sit to glass, and that was going to be perfect. And it was only about a mile, mile and a half, but about halfway up, John just looks at me and goes, "I don't really feel good."
Yeah.
And he'd been kind of like going real hard all week anyway. It was kind of, I think he was a little bit dehydrated, probably having some altitude sickness issues. So he turned back and ended up hiking all the way back to camp and left me the truck even.
It's a lot for him to turn back.
He was beating himself up pretty bad over it. And like, we probably sat there and talked for 30 minutes and he was just like, "Dude, I don't want to put myself in a bad situation out here." And like, wasn't exactly ideal. It was still pounding snow. I probably, like, hindsight, I had no business staying out there myself.
Alone.
And, yeah, especially alone. It just, snow all day, wet, heavy snow. Yeah. And I don't know. I didn't see any elk anyways.
Yeah, we saw that big herd and we were like, "We're going to get on them next morning, no problem." And I guess
it was right where they were at. I hiked all the way in there. And Ryan later that day, he was like, "Oh, yeah, I went and glassed that whole area, and they were about 1,000 feet below you and maybe another quarter mile over." And there was like 5-10 minute window that he was able to look over into that and see them. And it was so socked in all day, I couldn't see anything. I mean, my visibility was maybe 50 to 100 feet max. And
so you were just hoping to run into them. Like, that's your only option at that point.
Yeah. Find tracks and maybe be able to follow them through it. Because if any tracks that you find in that kind of snow, they got to be fresh. But mostly I was hoping for a clear window when I was just kind of in the right place at the right time. And trying to sit through that kind of a snowstorm just out there by yourself is it's a lot to handle.
Yeah.
And I knew you guys were all leaving that afternoon. And
yeah, I was real nervous about driving back to Denver with how much snow was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And accidents on the way in, and if that highway was shut down, it's not a...
I mean, it took us 9 hours to get from the Springs to where we were going.
And yeah, it's not a great...
It should have been a 4.5-5 hour drive.
Not a great drive, especially at night, being unfamiliar driving on snow. I was very clearly nervous about it, so I wanted to leave before dark. Cole went to the glassing pad to see if he could watch you go smoke one.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was just, the visibility was zero. It would come in spurts. It would clear up. Classic Colorado. Clear as day, bluebird skies for 30 seconds. And you're like, "Oh yeah, heck yeah. Like, we're in business." And then the veil would come back.
It's crazy how fast it would lift and then come back down. And like, you'd immediately just had to like take advantage of those glass and windows and see what you could see.
Which wasn't a whole lot.
No, it was not. So John moves back. You're wandering around the mountains going on a hot snow hike.
Taking my rifle for a nice post-holy walk.
All day.
All day. I didn't get back till
2 a.m. till 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Like dark, dark.
Yeah. I hunted my way out at about 2 p.m. I finally was like, "Okay, I'm out. I'm going to start working my way back to the truck." And sweat my balls off the whole day. I had no problem being cold. I had a problem being hot all day. It was just work.
And in that wet snow, that's dangerous.
Yeah, and that was the issue that we were running into, too, is it wasn't that cold. Like, the snow was piling up, and it was sticking a lot. It was super wet, but the ground wasn't freezing. Because
mm-hmm.
We were low. We dropped down to 62 at one point, and we climbed back up. We have to go up to come down or whatever the fuck you said. So we dropped down. We drive down the main kind of the main road in, which is, you know, main road is a relative term. Drop down. There's this little access road that goes up into the BLM, and road is also a relative term. It's a two-track that you could not take a vehicle on, maybe a side-by-side, but even in this snow, I would not want to. So we're walking it, and Carter and I talked before we went out there. It was like, "All right, we're going to go real slow, like try to manage our temperature, not get hot, and, you know, be ready to see a deer, because that area looked like there was a lot of deer there. Tim has said they've killed a lot of deer in there in years past, and just, you know, walk that road, and then we were going to walk around, then you climb back up, and then you can glass into a bunch of bottom areas. And so that was kind of the game plan for the day. And then if we didn't see anything or get into anything, we're going to hunt our way back, and then Carter was going to leave, and I was going to cruise the property with Tim and try to smoke that big boy. So we start moving.
We got to sleep in, which was nice.
Yeah, because there's no point in getting out there until, I mean, I didn't sleep in, but I woke up with John.
Right. But we didn't have to get up.
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, we could be slow in the morning, drink coffee, hang out in the lodge. Like, it was kind of nice, actually, because, like, and then the sun even came up. It was like 7:30, and I was like, it's too foggy. We can't even see anything. Like, let's let the sun get higher, and because there's no point in trying to walk this two track and still hunt if we can't see. So, yeah, it was nice to have that slower pace for sure.
Yeah, and I wanted to do one last. I had really bad FOMO not going with Garrett and John.
Well, you really wanted to.
I wanted to bad.
That your plan was initially, and I was like, buddy, like, by the time you get out there, if you're trying to leave when you want to leave, so trying to do like a little time distance analysis, it's like you're only gonna realistically get out there and hunt for like an hour. And
then it would not have made sense.
You're gonna have to turn around and walk back by yourself.
Yeah. But I was stoked we got to do one more. Challenging,
yeah, it was
physical activity rather than just sitting and glassing. Kind of.
Well, that was the guides were kind of like, yeah, your best bet's probably just to hunt the roads tomorrow. And I was like, and I'm not above shooting one, rolling around in one of the 4x4s and like jumping out and taking a shot. Like I've done that before. I would do it, but to me, if we didn't kill anything and I waited around till 10 a.m., you know, like for them to get back from dropping all the clients off. Then I would feel like I wasted that day versus if we go out and we actually hunt and then I don't get anything. Well, we were still hunting.
Yeah.
So that was like kind of – I was just really pushed to go do that in the morning. And it timed out well for you too because like you could at least get after it and do some hunting.
Right.
And there was a chance we saw some elk down in there. You know, Tim said there's been elk. So we start moving up and we're taking our time, good pace, slow, stopping, airing out, trying to not sweat too much because it is straight up through mud and snow. And so it's you're putting some work in to get up there. And we're doing a pretty good job of trying to, you know, move quiet, move slow, still hunting in. We're not playing grab ass like we sometimes do. And why don't you take it from when we kind of crest that one little IV line into the where the power line was.
Yeah, we were. I was slipping and sliding on my boot skis.
Yeah,
because that ground wasn't frozen, which made it a little more challenging to get up that vertical. But luckily, that snow is good to hike in, and we crest this IV line, and it opens up into this beautiful. I've been calling it a meadow. It's not a meadow. It's a tenth of what a meadow. Yeah. Whatever you're picturing in your head for a meadow, it's about a tenth the size of that. Maybe 100 yards. Long football field kind of thing opening in this very thick side of this mountain, and it's like a shelf, right? And we kind of crest this line, and we can see this. It's the first time we can see a good distance. And I'm in front of Luke, and I had already taken myself out of the game. I wasn't like the shooter at that point in time. I was just hiking with Luke. You know, serving my penance one last hunt before I leave a day early kind of thing. And I should have been either next to you or behind you, but we're just trudging our way along, and I stop, and Luke stops. And I was like, deer, deer, deer. And I saw some brown shapes at the end of this opening. I saw this deer coming out directly towards us, like she was on a rope walking towards us, coming out of this thick, dark trees. It was so cool. And she just, like, lit up because everything's covered in snow. The trees are covered in snow. The branches are holding a ton of this wet snow. And you can just, you're like, deer. And that was kind of the cool part. It just illuminates these animals. I see her right away. And then behind her, immediately behind her, I see antlers. And there's a nice buck behind her with, like, his nose on her butt kind of thing, clearly rutting hard. And I thought she was him at first. That's how, like, in profile they were. His antlers just came out behind her. And then as soon as she saw us instantly, and then turned broadside and kind of took a couple steps. The mule deer give you a few, they're a little forgiving for a couple seconds. And I was like, buck, buck, buck. I was like, shooter buck. And, well, like we were in the game all of a sudden.
Yep.
After not being in the game, we were there. There were at least two deer right away. And Luke was like, get me a range as he dropped his pack and got his rifle off his shoulder and was getting ready. Was shooting standing off freehand, right? He's like, get me a range. And I'm like, it's a big mule deer. It's a, you know, I haven't had a lot of experience mule deer hunting, but I've got, you know, four trips.
It was the biggest
trips.
One that we've seen together.
Four trips under my belt, and it was exciting.
I also thought he was bigger than he was. I mean, he's a good deer, but, like, I thought, like, when I looked through at my scope, so that was the other thing. I was like, we're not exactly, like, it's hard because, yeah, ideally you have your scope cover off, but it's wet snow. So I had to have my scope cover on or my scope was going to just fill up. So I'm trying to get the scope cover off. You're pulling a range. I throw up, and he's facing right at me. The doe bolts off going up the ridge, and he's like...
she takes one look and is like, see you nerds later.
And this guy's like, you know, he's just dumb and rutting.
Are you another doe?
Yeah, I'm like, what's that over there? And he's looking at me dead on. And I thought for a second to take a full frontal shot on him, but then he turned, and then it was just like, all I could think was just, big buck, put one in him.
Yeah.
And
I pulled a range. I was like, 107. And you were like, all right, cool.
And I shot him, rush shot offhand at 100, and I hit him back. But I hit him. He clearly hit him. He dropped his ass. He arched a little bit. And he kind of stood there, and Carter was like, shoot him again, shoot him again. So I racked another round. I dropped to a knee at this point, grabbed my pack. I was like, I'm going to get, like, more stable, make sure I do a good shot. And I pulled the trigger and click. I had a fucking light primer strike on the round. I don't know if it was the round or the rifle. It should not, better not be the rifle.
At this point, he had dropped to the ground, and I was like, pressure's off. We're good.
Yeah.
I have my phone out, and I'm videoing.
Yep.
Because I'm like, I'm going to get this on video. This is cool. Because this happened in the span of...
seconds.
I don't know, probably less than 10 seconds. Yeah. It was insane.
It was really fast.
And then I have your click on video. And I was like, oh, no. And then I was like, we're going to lose this deer. I go back to my old self, and I'm like, God.
Yeah. And that was
immediately behind them, it's very clearly terrain that you do not want to be in. It drops off immediately after this little shelf.
Yeah, and it's super thick. It's all super butt brush thick. And the oak brush. And like, it's,
you don't want to track a deer in that.
It's going to be – I mean, the snow would make it easier, but it's going to be difficult. Snow and tracks, it's actually the best tracking conditions, honestly. Except the snow is falling so quickly that you could lose it if you don't get on it quick. And it wasn't a lethal. I mean, it was a lethal shot long term, but I knew it was a bad hit because I rushed it. And I knew I did. And I don't know that I necessarily regret it. I probably had another 3 seconds to take and just calm down. But I was, I was just so sure that buck was going to run. It was like all I could think in my head was just like, get one in him, get one in him, get one in him. And then, we'll, you know, it's close enough that shoot him once and we'll shoot him again. And... that's probably a controversial way to look at it. You know, a lot of guys always talk about everything has to be perfect. But, like, in the reality of the situation, if you're jump shooting animals in thick terrain, like, it's not always going to be perfect. I am going to practice more. You know, I'll go more into the whole off-season stuff, lessons learned from this. But I'm going to shoot more offhand at further ranges for sure.
Offhand at 100, I was like... I would have never been like, oh, that's a practical application now very clearly.
Yeah.
Because we were practicing, what, 300,
yeah.
400, 500.
Yeah, I would have been more comfortable.
For this hunt specifically.
I would have been more comfortable.
Who would have thought?
Off the bipod in the prone at a 500-yard shot than I felt about that 100-yard offhand shot.
But at that shot, you have a lot of time.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Well, and that was – so then I started to, like, shoot, bad hit, nose bad hit. But he's still there. Go to shoot again. Click. And also, like, I could not get stable because, like, the one thing about Kafaru packs are the frames are not really built to be, like, a shelf. Like, they're not – it's not that hard structure frame. So, you know, there's other packs that you can set in that pack or just, like, sit up. Kafaru's not great for that. And also, in hindsight, I had my fucking tripod. I probably had the time to go ahead and just pull it out and at least set up on it. But, you know, you're just in the moment and you're just trying to just get it there. It's like, I'm just – at this point, like, I had –
just the first shot I felt pretty calm on, but this one I started to get the adrenaline, and I was like, I even like said on the video, I'm like, dude, I cannot get stable. I'm shaking like a motherfucker. Finally stable out a little bit, go to shoot again, and then click. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I go to rack another round. Well, my dumbass, I only had two rounds in the fucking rifle because I had three, and then I had cleared it and put that round in my pinel harness. And then that day when we went to hunt, I just racked, chambered a round, so I only had two. So now I have to reload. So luckily I had the rounds in my pinel harness, and they were right there, which was the lesson learned from previous hunts. That, and so like, I'm reloading, and this buck's like sitting here. So now like I'm just getting more and more amped, and then I can feel Carter's like, he's like, let's go. And this buck is just sitting there, and like he's kind of fucked up, you know, like. And
I drop my pack. I get my rifle in my hands.
Yep.
I'm like, do you want to?
In hindsight, I should have just taken your rifle.
Well, didn't you take a bit of a tumble the day before with your rifle in your hand?
I did. Yes.
So like, that almost makes me wonder if it is something with the rifle.
Well, it was, because when I shot that doe in Virginia, we went to the range at Peach Bottom, and my scope was a little off. Yeah. Now, it was a little off, but that hit was also because I rushed the shot and I got to body and pulled the trigger, and I knew I did. Like, it was literally like, you know, when you're like kind of you think you can see it all happening, but then you're pulling the trigger and it's almost like you're not pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
It was like, this isn't the right spot. Boom.
Yeah.
So like not ideal, right? And that's how it goes in those moments sometimes. And guys that tell you that, you know, they have a closed loop the entire time are, they're either really, really experienced or they're full of shit. Because when you're in those snap situations, you can get pretty, pretty Western. Well, anyways, get the rifle reloaded, go to shoot him again, and Carter's like, you missed. And I was like, fuck. And now he turns, and he's only got his ass to us. And I rack another round, and Carter's like, just put one in his ass. So, you know, and that's something that, like, it kind of goes against, as a hunter, like, you don't really want to take that kind of shot. But, you know, we're talking to the guy, Ryan, and he was like, yeah, I mean, and this is kind of the right mentality. It's like, once you have a round in him, like, now you just got to make sure you put him down.
Yep.
Like,
As quickly as possible.
Don't lose this animal, because, you know, for a lot of reasons. But, you know, so I shot him right in the ass. Now he dropped. We're like, okay, he's down. His head came up. And we were standing there, and I was like, well, I didn't want to get up on him. Like, he was clearly, you know, wounded. Those shots, the two shots that we thought were in him, I was like, I don't want to – like, we weren't in a good position for an approach because he was on the higher ground, and so we couldn't see him, and the snow was so high, and the grass was tall. Like, I didn't want to get up on him and risk, one, him standing up, two, him actually, like, standing up and, like, turning on us. Like, it's a fucking – big mule deer buck, like, they can be dangerous. And I was like, we'll be patient, we'll just sit here. And we sat there for about like 15 minutes, and
the crazy thing, while we were sitting there, I'm just now remembering, we saw three other deer.
Mm-hmm.
Four other deer.
Yes. There was another buck that was probably bigger.
A big buck behind that came up a couple minutes behind him. He poked his head in the clearing, just fucking chocolate antlers, dude. Just like, I was like, holy shit. And then disappeared back into the shadows. And then another doe came screaming by us at like 10 yards with a little spike behind her chasing her. It was crazy.
It was.
While this thing's over here.
Dying.
Finishing its. It was weird.
And so now I'm sitting there. We can only really see a skull cap whenever he'd raise his head. And like he would like raise his head and then he would drop. And it would look like he was doing that like death shudder. But then all of a sudden his head would come back up and you're like, fuck. And so finally I could only see the skull cap. Obviously didn't want to shoot him in the head. And so I didn't even give you any warning. I was just like, fuck it. And I threw the rifle up. I aimed below his head into the grass and snow because it was high grass. So the bullet would go through, and then I would just hit him in the neck. I shot, his head dropped. I was like, fuck, we're done. Okay. And Carter was like, let's give it another couple seconds. I was like, all right, rack another round. We're sitting there. And, like, you can see his horns, and he looks completely still.
Yeah. For a long – I think we did everything right, honestly.
And then all of a sudden, that head comes back up.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, I must have missed his neck.
He was getting frustrated, if you can believe it.
Dude, I've never seen anything like this, other than there was a doe on our farm in Virginia that Perry and his buddy were hunting, and they shot it a lot of times because it was a similar situation where it's just like, I mean, one, it's the will of these critters to live. Two, it's like sometimes you can put rounds that seem like they're in the right place, and you're just missing the right spots or whatever. But yeah, so I was like, fuck it. I was like, give me your – I took your 30-06 because I had a 6.5 Creedmoor, which we'll get into in a second. And I walked up with a 30-06 and shot him point blank in the neck, and that put a hole in him and had some trauma. So that ended it, and that was rough. I mean, that's not how you want that to go. On one hand, it's a, you know, we got an animal on the ground, you know, and all in all, you know, the whole process was probably, I don't know, 20-25 minutes, which in the moment seemed like 10 hours, but in the big scheme of how animals die in the wild, that's still a relatively quick death for an animal, but you still don't want it to suffer, you know, when you're out there hunting. You want to make a good shot. You want to put it down as quickly as possible. You want to, you know, do things, but shit happens. And that's something we're always going to be really honest about, and I always will be as well, is like, I'll talk to you guys about the shit that goes right, the shit that goes wrong, and the lessons learned in between, because it's important, you know. So what was going on, what's crazy is we ended up, so we got it back to camp, whatever.
8:35 to 8:42.
That was the whole process?
That was it.
Oh, my
gosh. It seems like forever, doesn't it?
It seemed like it was that we were there for 2 hours. Yeah. So it's still a relatively fast saga, sojourn. So, yeah, we...
I just checked my camera roll for timestamps.
That's crazy. A lot happened in that short amount of time. Yeah. A lot went through my mind.
Same. Because you're trying to help whoever the shooter is, right? And we talk about this all the time.
When you were a huge help, because like at one point I was so fucking flustered and you were like, you're fine. Like, you know, after the squib round, I was like, fucking. And then I was reloading.
I
I'm trying to reload.
Throw his rifle off the side of the mountain.
I was fucking losing my goddamn mind. At one point, I was like, I'm going to go slit this thing's throat. Like, but then I was like, that's a big fucking mule deer buck.
Dude, his antlers were big. He could have.
This isn't a doe that I can put my.
Well, yeah. And that's a hard situation, too, because Ryan and I got put in that situation earlier while we were guiding. Mm-hmm. We had one of our clients put a round pretty much right in the bull's spine, and it was still alive when we got down there like 3 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And it was some nasty, thick shit. So when it fell, its antlers got pinned underneath a log. And we were able to go up, grab the antlers, and cut its throat. And that thing took 20 minutes for it to die in our hands.
Jeez.
And that was, like, one of the hardest things that I think I've ever done in the woods. It was just, like,
yeah,
having to sit there and basically, like, we did, both of us were just holding the antlers to that log just so that we didn't get fucked up in some way in all of this. But, like, you just want it to die quickly, and that thing took a long time for it to bleed
out.
Man.
They're
like,
tough fucking animals.
They
and
are.
We had that thing cut clean through to the spine on the throat, and it still took some time. So that was like hard to do. Like, I'd rather put more rounds in it, but in Colorado, because of the way the law works, you can't shoot it after dark. Mm-hmm. So when we came up on that bull that night, it's 9:30 at night.
Yep.
And there's no way we can put another round in it.
Mm. Yeah, it's I understand why that law is there, but it's kind of there's a second, third order effect to that law that's silly. Like, you should be able to dispatch wounded animals. Now, obviously, guys are going to abuse that take advantage or whatever, but it's just, it's one of those things that, I guess, six on one hand, half a dozen on the other. But yeah, it shit like that does. I mean, and it's happened to me in the past. It's happened to me with Perry and Evan, and they've had experiences with when the whitetail woods. Like, it doesn't, like, you want it to be clean and fast, but it's not how it always works out. And you need to know that going into what you're doing, because it's a reality of the situation. And guys, that if you've been hunting for a few years and you've never had that happen, that's awesome.
It will.
But don't get cocky, it will. Yeah. You know, like, you can't, like, shit just happens. Sometimes it's mistakes that you make, and sometimes things are just outside of your control. So, you know, a deflection on a tree branch you didn't see, or a piece of sage, or, you know, you bump your rifle scope and don't realize it. Like, you know, things happen. So just know that it's probably coming, and understand that it's part of it. And the way that is really, I used to get really sick to my stomach and, like, when I quit hunting, if I lost an animal or if one got wounded or something. But
you know, one, it's going to happen when you accept the fact that you're a hunter and you're going to kill animals. Like, you're going to lose animals. And it's not that you should take it any more lightly, but it's a reality of the situation. And other animals lose animals.
Yeah.
Other animals wound animals. And, like, they're hunters. And that's just part of the nature, literally, of what we're doing. And then, you know, as a hunter, when you do kill one, even if it takes 3 hours, if you, have, you know, it's a bad shot and it's got to sit for a night, that's still a better death than what a lot of these animals are going to get when they're eaten alive from the ass end first from coyotes or wolves, or they're freezing to death or starving to death, or they're getting, you know, stabbed. The bucks are running themselves in the ground and they're emaciated. Like,
or sucked dry from, you know, bot flies,
yeah,
or
yeah,
ticks, or, you know, some of those moose up in Maine. Or if you ever feel, if you need a little perspective,
yep,
nature is metal on Instagram for sure. Go watch, yep, some of that shit and you're like, weird. It's almost like we're providing a service. Like, nature,
yeah,
is insane.
It's,
dude,
it's crazy, you know.
Damn, nature, you scary.
Yeah, no kidding, dude.
But so get the buck down, and, you know, which was good. Get the guts out of him. We drag him down the mountain, which was kind of nice.
It was way nice.
Because we had a two-track, and we just drug him straight down. Gravity did most of the work. Good wet snow. Like, we were still getting a little warm because we're still dragging a, I don't know, he probably weighed at least 250 on the hoof.
Huge.
He was a big buck. I mean,
he was huge.
He wasn't, which is crazy because he wasn't that mature of a buck, but he's rutted as shit. His neck was all swole. Like, I mean, he was probably a 3.5-year-old buck, but we're dragging him down the mountain, get to the truck, get him loaded. And then we go to drive out. And we're at the bottom.
And
we got to
drive.
It
snowed a lot since we've.
And mind you, the ground still hasn't frozen. And we're doing pretty good.
I knew I couldn't relax till we were back at camp.
Oh, dude, your anxiety was contagious. But in your defense, even if you're not scared of heights, it was slick as shit.
You should be.
And if you go off the wrong side of the road, you're tumbling.
It's going to be a bad day.
Like, you're either going to flip and get stuck into some trees, or you're going to go all the way to the bottom and probably die.
Dude, at one point.
I was
going to
say, if you go off that road, you're not going to survive.
We were driving up, right, and the mountain's on your left, on your driver's side, for your listeners. At one point, Luke's like, do you want to get in the rear seat behind me on the driver's side? And I was like, I was actually just thinking about that. Because the precipice is like 4 feet away from me on the passenger side window. I almost got in the back and got on the other side of the truck.
Yeah, it got western. So we got stuck at one point. Stuck. Slid off. There's this one turn. It's real steep, and then it right into the, as it gets steep, it turns to the left. And every time we were trying to come up and out of that, my ass end, because it's a truck, would slide into the ditch.
The water ditch.
And the water ditch, the drainage ditch, and then sink into the snow. And the only way I could get us out, and I fucked up the side of my truck doing this, because I did it, what, 3 times or at least twice? I'd have to put it in reverse and four low and ride all the way down.
100 yards back.
100 yards to the bottom.
To get out of the road.
So I can get out of the ditch, because the ditch was so thick and the snow was so wet and muddy.
Fuck.
And then I'd have to shoot back up. And I was being pretty conservative because, you know, on one side, it's this ditch in the mountain that's scraping the side of my truck. On the other side, it's sheer vert with not a lot of trees. So if I overshoot it and we fishtail going around, and I lose the tire on that end, like, we could be in a really bad spot. But then I finally just had enough of it. And I was like, Carter, fucking hold on. And I hit it fucking hard, and I start carving. So for those that have never been in snow or mud, if you take your front tires and you rock them back and forth and you carve, you can get traction and kind of climb. And so that's what we ended up doing, and we definitely fishtailed around, shot out of there like a bat out of hell, but we got through it.
Thank God you had that deer in the bed to give you a little
extra weight. That's
should have left the guts in him.
Yeah, no joke. That's a whole other point. Is like, Colorado can get real sketch any time of the year because snowstorms happen, but especially that time is like, I am definitely gonna upgrade my self recovery kit. So this summer I'm gonna install a winch on my truck. I'm going to have a couple come-alongs and pulleys, because with a couple pulleys and a winch, you can change your angles. Like, if you roll it, you can flip it back over. That was something I needed when I rolled my Tacoma. definitely chains for the tires.
Chains are necessary. That's something that
all four tires.
Especially me going on the road over the next few months. Like, I have to have chains in my truck at all times.
Definitely. And then I'm going to have, you know, probably if we go back up for that kind of hunt, I need to have, you know, 300 pounds of sand in the bed of the pickup just for weight over the rear axle. So I have a heavier truck.
Or all the coolers constantly in the truck full of ice.
Yeah.
Just don't take them out of the truck.
Yeah.
Multi-purpose.
So, but the sand's good too, because then if you get stuck in the snow, you can, and then shovels and like just, you know, a whole toolkit. Like you just, you, I need to have that. I've got some tools in my truck. I've got a shovel. I've got a, an axe. I've got, you know, toe straps, but I definitely don't have, and having a winch would have been nice, because if we gotten stuck on the front end, I could have just winched to that tree and pulled us right out and then not had to get Western shooting up the top. So, but anyways, we get back to camp. Start getting the hide off this thing.
We're the heroes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I pull that thing straight up to the skin and pull, man. Everybody's, because there are other guys in camp from the Midwest, Wisconsin and Minnesota, I think. And sure enough, like, flies to shit, man. They just.
Everybody
it's,
came
it's
out.
Like a, it's like a bell goes off and people start
pouring out of the
flocking
cabins.
Flocking out of their cabins. Everybody knows.
Well, we were talking about that because, like, a lot of these guys, because of the snow, weren't hunting that morning. And we were even, like, ordering to walk it up. We're like, man, like, this might be – we might just be going for a walk because we can't see a goddamn thing. But I must, you can't kill him in camp. I mean, I almost killed him in camp the day before. But you really can't kill him from the cabin, right? Like, you can't kill him from the cabin. So getting out there and just hunting, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, it was funny. After we came back, everybody seemed to kind of be revitalized, and everybody in camp wanted to get back out and go hunting that afternoon, which was cool. So, but I start getting the hide off of it, and it was wild. So, 6.5 Creedmoor is a pretty controversial round. I'm pretty open-minded when it comes to a lot of things. I think that rifles and calibers and, you know, bow setups and all these things that everybody gets super cultish on, there's nothing more than tools in a toolbox and different tools for different applications, right? Like, you've got a framing hammer, you've got a roofing hammer, and you got a general hanging pictures on the wall hammer, right? Like, they're the same tool can have different applications based on, you know, this what it is. And I think the 6.5 Creedmoor is no different. And when I went to the 6.5, I wanted a round that was flat shooting, that I could reach out at a little better distance, that I could really hone some long-distance shooting. And Evan had gotten one, really liked his. I'd shot his a couple times, and that's really why I decided to go with the Creedmoor. Because with the ELDX rounds, you can run 143-grain bullet, which I was shooting a 30-06 at 150 grain, so I'm not losing that much. And then at tighter distances, you're not even losing a lot of the velocity and that, you know, the kinetic energy that everybody's always talking
recoil,
about.
Zero recoil, which was way cool.
Zero recoil. I mean, I can shoot that thing. I mean, I'm sub-MOA at 200 with that rifle. So it's a really good shooting rifle. But the round definitely has limitations. And Evan and I have been talking prior to this about how, you know, we didn't love how small the exit holes on some of these animals we've shot with it are, because it's the round just doesn't expand that much. And I called Lyle at one point about that rifle, and Lyle's, for those that don't know, he runs Tracking Dogs down in Alabama and Georgia, and so that dude knows more about, you know, gunshots and arrow shots and sight hits. I mean, he's tracked hundreds and hundreds of good and bad hit animals, and he said he loves the Creedmoor past 200, and under 200 he doesn't see the expansion. And that's exactly what I saw shooting that mule deer. So when Carter thought I missed, I hit it high shoulder, and it punched through like a fucking pencil. It
just zipped right through.
The exit and the entrance did nothing.
Because I saw it blow up on the tree.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't think you hit it.
High. Yeah. It didn't. There was no, like, the exit hole looked exactly like the entrance hole. And then the ass expanded. So when I hit it in the ass, but I mean, that's going through a lot more meat. The next shot, when I thought I missed into the dirt, I shot him clean in the neck at the base, like right where the shoulders meet the neck. I hit him perfectly center, and that shit didn't kill him. And same deal, the hide, it was just a punch hole. And the exit wasn't very big, and it clearly stunned him. So that's, you know, thinking back at what happened, because when I hit him, he fell and he looked dead.
Yeah.
But then he came back too, and he lifted his head back up. And that, dude, he was a dead deer after the first shot. When I looked at him again, it was just going to take more and more time. But, yeah, so those 6-5 rounds just zipped through at 100 yards. Like, no damage other than when I shot him through the ass because it had a lot more meat to expand through. And that was a little disconcerting. That really had me rethinking, like, the uses for that gun. Granted, on that hunt, I thought I was going to be, you know, shooting at more distance. But for an all-around, like, that kind of hunt, I will not take that rifle again. I'm going to take something that is, one, I'll probably bring a Magnum, and something that I can still take a poke out with some distance, and then also has the kinetic energy and the expansion at a shorter shot to really do some damage, because I just wasn't a fan. But then I shot a doe in Virginia at almost 400, and good expansion.
Yeah.
You know, like, the exit was solid. Thought I made a bad hit. I hit her a little bit off of where I was planning to. That was, found out the scope was off a couple inches, which accounted for that. But it was still a lethal hit, and we found her piled up. I jumped her out of a bed once, but then when she ran again, she piled up and died. And so, like, effective out at that, you know, distance, and I'm very comfortable shooting out to 500 with it. And yep. So it's like there's just pros and cons. Like, my 30-06, I am not comfortable shooting out to 500 with, but that round will just do a damn on anything under 300.
So
I'm not going to sell the Creedmoor, but I'm definitely going to be very selective. That's probably going to be my antelope gun from here on out. Smaller critter, dainty shots that are going to be 200 to 400.
Terrain where you can see where they run.
Exactly. Yep.
Antelope don't have much of a will to live either.
No.
They die pretty easy.
Yeah, they do. They're pretty dainty. Yeah. They get hit and they're,
It was awesome, though. It was amazing. It was so cool.
It was an experience.
Yeah.
It was an experience.
It was. Definitely a lot of lessons learned, but ton of meat in the freezer. Gonna have a cool Euro. I'm leveling up quick on my mule deer. I killed that fourth you with Gabe. Now I've got a good, like, decent representation of the species.
It was a mule deer, right?
Yeah.
The antlers went out.
That's what I wanted, and then up.
Parallel with the ground, and then up.
Good,
like a football post.
Yeah, good square. Like, that's a mule deer.
My mule deer looks like a whitetail.
Yeah.
They, like, curve around.
Yeah.
I want the...
Yeah, that's what
I want. The angles, the 90-degree.
That's
angles.
What I wanted. That's what I told everybody on the front end. I was like, I don't care how big it is. I was like, I just want it to look like a good mule deer, and that's what it is. So it was perfect for me. And
what a great way to end the trip too.
It was, and that's what John was even like. He was like, dude, like, I don't even care that we didn't get an elk. Like,
yeah.
Now this was a success. Like,
yeah.
We got an animal on the ground. Yeah. It, like, changed the entire mood of camp.
Good.
Definitely for our group, but for, you know, all of, you know, the rest of camp, you know. So it was cool.
We should have stuck it out one more day.
We should have.
Because they were in camp the next day.
Ryan was texting me all these pictures of all the bulls and, like, cows and shit getting shot. And it was
in, like, really doable spots.
Oh, dude.
I hit a bull at the bottom of the glassing pad.
Yep. Right where I was trying to manifest one?
Yep.
Perfect.
It just came a day late, an hour short.
Yep.
Well, that's something John and I were talking about. Like, I will always now, if it's going to be a hunt that I'm investing, like, real time, money, effort, especially at, like, with an outfitter, even if it's just a drop camp, I will be there 1 to 2 days early, and I'll be staying at least a day late. Because the problem is, if you don't have a day on the back end, you're basically killing yourself on that last day anyways, because if you shoot one, you're not going to be able to get it out. So you have to be leaving.
Which is why we had to leave a day early.
Yeah. So you
have that buffer.
You have to be leaving, you know, a good 36 hours after the shooting light on the last day. To give you the chance to be able to pack it out, process it, get squared away, or even quarter it to get it to the processor. So.
I learned a lot on this one. I learned that I'm not going to do a late season hunt ever again. That's for sure. But even if I do end up somehow getting shenaniganed into one, at least I'd be better prepared for it. Because, like, there's some things that, like, I don't know. It's kind of the whole mentality of, like, if you can just tough it out long enough, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some days of discomfort for sure.
Oh yeah,
I learned a ton about layering.
layering is going to be a big deal going forward. Like Luke said, my truck kit's going to be a little better suited for like that kind of a hunt. My own personal kit, I kind of learned a little bit about like what gear I liked that I had that was working pretty well and some stuff that I want to replace a little bit. I don't know. That was a good hunt, honestly, from that aspect of like, okay, we got shit on with snow for 4 straight days.
Yep.
So like, if you're going to learn some extremes about what your kit can do, that was a good hunt for it.
Good practical application.
Yep. It was a great one with the fact that we were not sleeping out in a spike camp. So it gave us a significant amount of maneuver room, right? We were able to go back, dry out. It wasn't like you're stuck in your wet clothes for a week. But yeah.
No, I think it would have been completely different if we were in a spike kind of camp situation where we were kind of left out to the woods.
Yeah, you know? We would have had to be, and I knew that. Like, there's a couple things that I wouldn't have done if we had been doing that, because it is forgiving when you're like, oh, I can go take my socks out by the heater or my pants and get everything dry tonight, dry my boots out. Like,
or just pack in. Like, we knew we were going to be staying at a camp where, like, our trucks were at, right?
Yeah.
We knew we were going to be able to have access to all of the extra gear. So, like, we had an extra set of dry clothes for basically every single day. And if we didn't, like, we had an ability to dry it out relatively easy. We had several sets of boots for some of us to be able to, like, have a dry boots, dry socks. Like, if we were doing the true backcountry thing, like, we're having to minimalize everything.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely... I would recommend for those that are new to hunting in the backcountry or hunting off their backs is to do a drop camp, potentially spike out from there, but have a camp, not necessarily a drop camp from an outfitter, but just have your own like truck camp where you're pulling in, you're able to bring the kitchen sink, you can have some amenities, and then you can spike from there if necessary, but have a base camp where you're not having to carry everything on your back.
Yeah.
Because with a lack of experience, it's going to give you a lot more of a lot more options and a lot more forgiveness. I've done a lot of the backcountry stuff, hunting solely off my back, not in fourth rifle, which that was a game changer. I'm really glad we didn't spike.
Same.
We had talked about it, and John and I talked about this at length. Like, there's no real risk for, like I'm not concerned because I'll just walk out. You know, it's like just... a walk to daylight, like, it's going to suck. It's going to be absolutely dog shit. Like, I'm not going to freeze to death because I'll just nav my way back and walk 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 miles if I have to get back to where I need to get and just continue to walk. And as long as I don't roll an ankle or get injured, it'll be fine. But it's still a situation you don't want to be in.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's a point where I was, like, completely soaked through my pants, my, like, long johns, everything was soaked. And I was like, okay, I can at least walk out and get to, like, a cabin. This isn't ideal, but, like, that day that I was out there when John had to go back, like, it was always that mentality of, like, okay, well, there's at least a warm fire and some ice-cold beer waiting for me down at the bottom of the hill.
Yep.
Like, all I got to do is just walk there.
Yep.
But if we were in some sort of a scenario where we were going back to a tent with, I wouldn't have been so willing to just sit out there and suffer like that. That's for sure.
But it was a hell of a hunt, hell of a week.
Yeah. Good Thanksgiving.
Yeah. We had a little bit of success, a lot of lessons learned, a lot of mistakes. But, I mean, I learned a lot about hunting elk, and especially in fourth rifle. I feel like the behavior was totally different than what you see in other seasons. And
we got some cool footage of them fighting and stuff like that.
It was just cool weird. To just see them, you know, and just see them out there and –
large groups.
Yep. So it was definitely worthwhile, and the vista was epic, and it was a good time. And we're just continuing to learn and grow our experience base, and hopefully we just make fewer and fewer mistakes as we go forward. I doubt we will. Seems like we make the same amount of mistakes. They're just different mistakes. But yeah, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up, man. You got any closing thoughts?
Not necessarily. Just stay dry.
Hell yeah. Carter had to jump off to go wrangle the kids, but we appreciate the hell out of all you guys. When this one drops, if you guys go place some orders, you should get them by Christmas. Just use UPS and not USPS, because USPS sucks. But if you place an order in the next couple days, and place it and choose UPS as your shipping. It should arrive prior to Christmas for those last minute gifts. And we have a drop that's coming out. If this launches on Thursday, new drops coming out on Saturday. It's going to be a couple tumblers, a couple shaker bottles, some new flags, kind of a smaller drop, but we wanted to throw out a few things that folks might be interested in for stocking stuffers or last minute gifts. So
it's
as
December
always,
16th is that drop.
Perfect. Yeah, so the 15th or 16th. So I got to wait on a couple product photos. But yeah, we'll get that launched. So check your email, check your SMS and social media and all that. But yeah, this should be live. And buy some stuff because we appreciate the hell out of you guys, as always.